with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, and hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas, Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcasts, and also check out the latest edition of the GM Shuffle podcast, which just dropped in your feed. You make sure you search that and subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your pods. In hour number two, we'll have a couple of guests joining us. Matt Mancharian coming up in 15 minutes, COO over at Sports Info Solutions, also former NFL scout, worked with Michael in Cleveland. We'll get his thoughts on the NFL draft. And then also in 30 minutes, Vic Lombardi, reporter at Altitude for the Denver Nuggets and Denver Broncos, will give us a skinny on what's happening in this series as the Denver Nuggets face an 0-1 deficit heading into tonight's game two, and also Denver Broncos rookie camp getting underway. How does Bo Nix look? What should we expect from Bo Nix in year number one? We'll ask that of Vic Lombardi. But Michael, we begin this hour discussing the NBA as we have the conference semifinal set after yesterday's game seven, Orlando falling to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cleveland getting it done, erasing an 18-point deficit at home, but they win it 106-94. Donovan Mitchell, 39 points, scoring a game high as he sort of put the team on his back in that second half as the Cavs move on to go ahead and face the Boston Celtics in round number two.
You know, not a good first half for Donovan, but he came out in the second half. I thought LeVert really helped them in the first half. The second half, you know, Donovan kind of took over the game. And look, the two of the better players on the Orlando Magic team did not shoot well, Suggs and Wagner. So when that happens, I mean, they're 3-for-28 from the floor. You know, Boncaro can only do so much. I thought Wendell Carter played really well. They built that big lead. But, you know, when you can't make shots, you're shooting 32% from the two-point line, you're going to lose the game. And you need your best players to play their best in big games. Everybody talks about the role guys in these playoffs final, you know, the seventh games and all this stuff. No, you need your stars to play really well. And you can't have a bad day. And Suggs didn't shoot well, and neither did Wagner. They couldn't make a three-pointer the whole goddamn day. So, look, Atlanta's a good young team. They're going to have some cap room, some flexibility, because they've been building this thing through the draft. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think ultimately they're in a good position. I mean, the East has got a lot of teams that are in good position. When you look at it, you know, the Knicks have done a good job. They've come back. Boston's been really good. And you know, we're going to see what the Pacers are going to add to their team. And certainly we have the City of Champions here that's going to do something for their team.
I guess I'm not going to have to grease the poles this spring. We'll have to put that off until next year. But I do want to go back to the point that you brought up about your best players needing to play their best in the biggest game, because that's what Donovan Mitchell was asked after yesterday's 39-point performance against the Magic. Here's what he had to say.
At the beginning of the series, like, this is why I'm here. It's my job. It's why there's an expectation on myself, you know, and I deserve the criticism as well, as much as the, you know, what do you call it? The success, the praise, you know what I mean? So, like, for me, it's just continue to be level-headed. I did my job. That's it. Like, you know, I just did my job, and I got to continue to do my job for us to continue to advance.
A very workmanlike approach there from Donovan Mitchell, who says, like, hey, like, I'm the best player. They're paying me like I'm the best player. This is what I came here to do. That's part of the – this is the requirement for holding that. Now he has to continue that forward against a really good Boston Celtics team that has been the favorite to win the NBA title from the start of the season. And, oh, by the way, the Celtics now minus 1,200 to win the series. Cleveland at 8-1 to pull off a massive upset.
And that's without Porzingis. I mean, think about that, Femi. He's hurt and probably will miss this series. I would suspect if they kind of dominate the series without him, that they may just hold him to get to the finals, you know, and know that it's going to be a tough go if they play the Knicks or even if the Pacers come through. So, yeah, I mean, look, Boston, I think the slap in the face that they received from the Miami Heat losing the game in the Garden, I think, woke them up. And they, after that, man, they look good the next three games, really good.
Yeah, no, they really did look really good as the Boston Celtics. You watch them play basketball. It's beautiful. Like, Coach Joe Mazzulla, who's still very young in his coaching career, by the way. This was his first full season as a head coach, led them to 64 wins. And as long as they can stay healthy, that's the big thing. And this Porzingis injury, it may not impact them against Cleveland, but I think if he's not all the way right and they play a New York Knicks team or a Pacers team in this next round in the Eastern Conference Finals, not to get too ahead of ourselves, I think that's when it can kind of maybe trip up the Boston Celtics. So they're a big favorite. The Knicks, their favorite to win game one tonight. They're 6-point favorites. Total is sitting around 217.5 against the Pacers. Actually, we're down to 5 now in the betting market. Indiana getting some of the money here. But the Knicks are -245 on the series price. This is a series that we talked about with TG in the last hour. It's going to come down to who dictates the pace. It's probably who's ultimately going to win this thing. The Knicks have been able to do that up until this point, but now they have a team in the Pacers who likes to run up and down the floor, which could be problematic for a Knicks squad that only plays about 7 guys.
Well, but look, the Knicks are built on defense. The Knicks are built on toughness. The Knicks are built on rebounding. What are the Pacers built on? The Pacers built on scoring and running, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they can't rebound, nor are they a very good defensive team. That doesn't really, to me, that doesn't lend itself to somebody you want to bet and play in terms of the series, right? Will they win a game? I don't doubt they will win a game. But in terms of winning 7-game series, for all we talk about offensively, it's got to start defensively. It's got to start with rebounds, defense. And I think when you watch what the Knicks were able to do against Philly in that 6-game series, right, you said, well, Philly got robbed in game 2. Well, New York got robbed in game 4-5. So it's like evened out, right? It was a 6 games. The Knicks were the better team. They played better. And because they controlled the rebounding, right? How many second chance points was Philly going to give up? And Indiana is a worse rebounding team than Philly. So, yeah. I mean, Brunson and playing at home with that crowd, with that electricity, I think it's certainly going to help them. And Hartenstein, you know, along with Robinson, if he's healthy, they won't have Bogdanovich, which I think really hurts them. That's where their depth. They're going to have to play 8 guys. I don't think you can go through a 7-game series, especially early, just cutting you down to 7. I think Thibodeau did that because he knew the urgency of that game. It was an elimination game. He knew he could take Philly out, and he didn't want to lose that game, and so he did. But I think in a 7-game series where you're trying to get it, he's going to have to give the guys some rest.
Yeah. Before we get to what's on Michael's mind, I did want to get this out there. Tim McMahon of ESPN tweeted that Rudy Gobert, who is about to become a father for the first time, is questionable for Game 2 due to personal reasons. So congratulations in advance to Rudy Gobert, which if he doesn't play in tonight's game, as the betting market right now is out to 6.5, this is probably going to be the defensive player of the year. That would be a big loss for this Timberwolves squad, which obviously this might not have the highest of urgency since they stole home court advantage, but they probably want to go ahead and put Denver in a world of hurt and still win this basketball game. They're not going to go out there and punt the game, but Denver, maybe this can go ahead and help them get back off of the mat here.
Yeah, I mean, that's just going to put Naz Reid more into the game and have to play, but Gobert's hard to replace, especially protecting the rim, which then allows, you know, Cat to do what he wants to do. Carl Anthony Towns, he can go out there and do kind of play that small forward role that he plays, and Gobert allows to protect the rim. I mean, that's, you know, he's a 7-foot small forward, but that's how he plays, and he plays it well, runs the court, shoots with range. You know, he's not going to dominate the rebounding because he's got Gobert there to do it. It's kind of the way Conley built the team, and we talked about this with JVT yesterday, you and I. He built the team understanding that these two big guys could operate together and play well.
Yeah, that was the big question mark when they made the trade for Gobert, and it's starting to work out. Maybe it was a little bit of a year later than we expected, but it's working out this season nonetheless. All right, let's get on to what's on Michael's mind here, and is President of Basketball Operations Daryl Morey, who's addressing the Philadelphia media right now for the Sixers. What are you thinking about with Daryl Morey's presser today and how the Sixers can move forward this offseason?
Well, I think what he's going to sell is hope, right? He's going to sell that, you know, we have all this cap room. We have basically, I was talking to somebody in the league yesterday at another team, and they were telling me they have basically a blank palette to paint on. You know, they have a lot of money. They have 2 players. They'll sign Maxey back. They have Embiid under contract. And he can really, we're going to find out what kind of team he wants to build. Now, they've had this before, right? They had this blank slate before. And that's when they decided to get rid of Jimmy Butler, sign Tobias Harris, sign Al Horford, do that team. They messed that all up. Elton Brand was responsible for that. Now Elton Brand's in the background. Now we got Morey's program. Now Morey loves older players, hates draft picks. They have 2 draft picks, 16th pick overall in the draft this year. Hates draft picks. I know he drafted Maxey, but Maxey was promised that slot before Morey even showed up. So that's not, let's not go there. But the reality here is this is a chance for him to redefine the team around a coach that he hired. He didn't hire Doc. And now these are going to be all his players. So we'll see how it all works out. When they traded Harden away, they basically bought themselves this freedom to reestablish the team. And even though they'll tell you they were going all in this year, they really weren't, because they knew this rainbow here is going to perhaps give them some gold. And I'm anxious to see what happens. I'm also know that it's probably not going to happen, and I'll be a frustrated fan again, because there's been no franchise in the history of sports that has blown these opportunities more. You laugh. I mean, we traded Brad Daugherty for Roy Hinson. We picked Sean Bradley. You know, we took Larry. I was talking to somebody yesterday. We took Larry Hughes over Paul Pierce. Let's just go through some of it, right? We picked Markelle Fultz. He played 14 minutes last night, looking nothing like the first overall pick in the draft, over Jason Tatum, who's going to go in the Hall of Fame. We made those decisions. When I say the 76ers, whoever their brain trust was, made those. So, let's not just all of a sudden think, we're going to start making smart decisions. It's inherent within the building. There's been no evidence that they've made good decisions. I mean, the Simmons over Larry over Jimmy Butler. To keep Tobias over Jimmy Butler. I mean, to sign Al Horford when who's making these decisions?
Yeah, Tobias Harris over me is a quote that I don't think a lot of Sixers fans like hearing anymore, but we hear it every now and then as Jimmy Butler has gone on to have a pretty good career. All right, we'll talk some more about this a little bit later on in this hour, but we'll have a guest joining us, Matt Manoogian of SIS, former NFL scout. We'll break down the draft here on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, if you're looking to take your sports betting up a notch, look no further than a VSiN Pro subscription. Your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. And for a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. It's normally $240. You can now grab it for just $199. You sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. You're going to get the daily best bets. You're going to get the 19 hours of live programming, the betting systems, the betting splits, all of that. Just VSiN.com/subscribe so you can claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. And most importantly, by using promo code Lombardi. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And joining us now to help us recap the NFL draft, we're bringing on Matt Manoogian, COO over at Sports Info Solutions. Also former NFL scout, worked with Michael in Cleveland. Matt joining us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Matt, good morning. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line. And I wanted to start off asking you, which teams do you think did really well in this draft about a week ago? Like, who improved their roster this year and also going forward?
Well, I think, it's hard to look at the draft and the offseason as a whole and not think that the Bears probably improved their team a lot here. And just that Caleb Williams is at the heart of that. Obviously, Roma Duse, exciting that he fell to them there. He's a really good player. Different aspects of their roster they need to look at, but I think you've got to be excited if you're them right now. A team that surprised me in terms of our analytics that actually came out with an even better draft than the Bears in terms of adding talent was the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top, that's a big one. But throughout the draft, they picked a lot of players that look like they can slot into their roster and become starting level players for them, people with positional versatility. So still a little bit thin in terms of the pass rush. They probably would have liked to get a little bit more pass rush juice, but I like the way that they improved their team.
And you think that Marvin will connect with Kyler Murray and really have a good chance to be Offensive Rookie of the Year, assuming that Caleb Williams doesn't secure all the votes with the Bears winning?
Yeah, I mean, the quarterbacks are going to have the inside track there, but Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, what I like about the bet there is he's probably going to get 100-plus targets. Like, they want him to be their new Larry Fitzgerald type, you know, base of their offense. And I think with Kyler Murray, there's a little bit that you could get there of he'll throw the contested ball up. He had some success with DeAndre Hopkins and kind of, you know, what do you call him, the mayor of Munchkinland. When he gets into trouble, he can throw the ball up in the air. And Mr. Harrison is there to bail him out. So I think there is a little bit of a synergy in terms of the skill set there where he could be Kyler Murray's best friend.
We're hanging out with Matt Mkhitaryan, COO over at Sports Info Solutions. Make sure you check it out, all the work that they do. They do analytics stuff, breaking down these draft prospects there. Matt, of course, working in the NFL as a scout under Michael in Cleveland. Well, Matt, which team then left you scratching your head when you saw their draft process? And when you guys compared it with your data in terms of looking at these prospects throughout the process, which team were you kind of left wondering, what are we doing here?
I mean, you already know the answer. It's Atlanta. It's hard to make sense of it. Listen, I've tried to make all of the right. I try to like put myself against like what all of my thoughts are and try to make every argument for them. And I come out with maybe if you've got two quarterbacks with injury histories, you feel like you actually might have somebody that's available for you each game of the season. So maybe it's a little bit of an injury risk hedge. I think that, you know, getting quarterbacks is hard. So if you feel really good about the player, that's good. But I mean, from a process, from a team building standpoint, getting Penix the reps to actually develop the way that you'd like him to, you know, for an already older prospect, it's just very difficult to wrap my head around it. To be honest, considering I used to work with Terry Fontenot, Ryan Pace, I've had very little ability to kind of understand what their philosophy has been down there, because it's felt like they've done some interesting things where you either want to be a team that builds up front or a team that builds from the perimeter. And they sort of like definitely went towards the perimeter on offense, but they've kind of been reaping the benefits of some of the players they inherited on the offensive line. And I don't know how long that's going to keep sustaining them going forward. So yeah, head scratching for sure, especially because I feel like I know how those guys think a little bit, but clearly I don't.
Well, okay, let's take that a little bit, Matt. You're an analytics guy. You understand value as it relates to you. If Pitts is the fifth overall pick in the draft, Drake London, what, 12? You know, eight, and then you had the eighth pick. Then 2 years in a row, they've had the eighth pick in the draft, and they used him on, tell me what. Like, how has the value of the pick matched the value of the selection?
Clearly the answer is no. Listen, they're great players. You want to make sure that you're drafting great players. Nobody's going to argue about that. You know, the running back last year, love the player, but that's not a high value position when you're drafting a running back at number eight. You look, even the money they spent last year in the offseason, Jesse Bates, great player. I don't know how you really build a defense around your safeties, right? I played safety back in the day. I love safety play as much as anybody, but I don't know how you build your defense around that. So I think that they're, as time goes on, they're thinning out more and more up front. Some of these good draft picks that came in that played pretty well for them, the Lindstroms and the McGarrys, these guys are getting a little bit long in the tooth. And I think, okay, great, we have this whole basketball team of receivers to throw to, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to protect. Maybe that's another reason why you want to have two quarterbacks, right? Because someone's going to get injured behind this line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they feel comfortable about their quarterback depth chart in Atlanta there if Kirk Cousins is not able to bounce back from Achilles rehab for the Atlanta Falcons. All right, was there a draft pick, let's say outside the first round, that when the name was called, you said, I love that fit with that team for this player? Like, who outside the first round you thought would be a really nice fit that can maybe make an impact from day one this season?
I will go with the first pick of the second round, Keon Coleman. I've loved Keon Coleman as a player. I think that he can step in and fill a bit of a void in that Bills depth chart. He's a guy that didn't run fast. And if you're looking for somebody that's going to be that backbreaker, that true number one, I don't think that's what you're getting right here, but I do think that he can come in. He can sort of solidify the depth chart for the Bills. And he's a playmaker that can get it done in a few different ways, right? He can get it done being a ball winner down the field, but he's also somebody you can get the ball into his hands in space around the line of scrimmage. And he can bring some different things to the table there. So going along with the Bills sort of taking a refreshed approach and really trying to lean more into being an upfront team that's going to come at you. I like having this sort of ball winner, hybrid type, really great athlete at the end of the day is what Keon Coleman is, who's produced on the field. So I think he fits in terms of coming in right away and helping them out.
And how about as it relates to Pittsburgh? What did you think of Pittsburgh's draft? And understanding that, you know, we all might not be Russell Wilson fans here, but their ability to add all the pieces together, do you think they're a team that can compete in the North?
Oh, certainly they're a team that can compete. I mean, all they've done for years and years and years is compete. But I do worry in some ways about exactly how the quarterback situation is going to shake out for them. But when I look at them, what I like is a little bit of a return to like Steelers football, really trying to beat you up on the offensive line and realizing that you don't have to bring in all these receivers and bells and whistles to build an offense if you can shove it down a team's throat a little bit, like the Lions running all their duo game and stuff like that that they've been doing recently. I like that because I think that makes the quarterback's job easier as opposed to trying to give the quarterback weapons. You can kind of make any quarterback look better if you put him behind a good offensive line.
Well, right now, looking at the defensive rookie of the year mark here, Matt, we got about a minute left. Dallas Turner is the favorite at 4-1 at DraftKings. Leautu Latu is the second choice at 7-1. Quinyon Mitchell, 10-1. Jared Verse, 11-1. Is there a guy that you think could be a good value bet here in the defensive rookie of the year market?
Ooh, that's interesting. The defensive rookie of the year market. I would have thought one of those first two guys. Those were the top two edge rushers that we had in our draft board. I thought they were nice value picks that came a little bit later there. They easily could have been top 10 picks there. In terms of those two, I like them a lot. The three tech from Texas, I think he could be a guy that would be in the mix there. And then, you know, any of these corners, if somebody comes and gets five interceptions, then they're going to be in the conversation. But yeah, I'm always the type that's going to bet more on the defensive line players to make a big impact early on.
Yeah, those are the guys that make the splash plays for the stats. We saw Will Anderson win the award just a year ago. Byron Murphy, by the way, 13-1 to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. He is Matt Manicharian. Check out all of their great work. They're COO of Sports Info Solutions. They have their draft boards up there, a lot of stuff, not just NFL, but FBS as well, a bunch of other sports as well. Also worked with our buddy Michael Lombardi here in Cleveland. Matt, we appreciate the time as always, man. Be well.
Thanks, Matt. Great work.
Thanks, Michael. You're the best.
That stuff there from Matt Manicharian over at Sports Info Solutions joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. He mentioned Keon Coleman, Michael, 28-1 over at DraftKings to an Offensive Rookie of the Year because he wasn't the first-round pick, but he's going to get a lot of targets, though, given the fact that Buffalo kind of overhauled that receiver.
He's going to go right in there. Absolutely.
100% there.
Absolutely.
All right.
He's going to get play time.
You got Vic Lombardi of Altitude joining us next. We'll talk some Denver Nuggets and the Broncos as well here on the Lombardi.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, if you go into the VSiN.com website there, you'll see excellent articles about how to bet this Nuggets-T-Wolves series. Denver facing an 0-1 hole at home in Game 2 later on tonight. Make sure you check out and get all the best bets and the angles to play for game number 2. VSiN.com. Make sure you're a pro subscriber. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. And to help us break down tonight's Game 2 in Denver, a gotta-have-it game for the Denver Nuggets who want to avoid that 0-2 hole. We're bringing in Vic Lombardi, reporter for Altitude, covers the Nuggets and the Broncos, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Vic, we appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure during a busy, busy day. What happened and what went wrong in Game number 1, and how do the Nuggets correct that for Game 2 tonight?
Well, a couple things went wrong. First of all, Anthony Edwards, who is unstoppable when he finds his jump shot. When he hits that turnaround jump shot, good luck. I'm not sure there's anybody in the league that can stop him. That happened. And then the fact that the Nuggets got outclutched, and their forte, their strength, the one thing that helped them win the championship last year was the fact that they were able to outclutch every team in crunch time. When it came to the final 6 minutes of a game last season on their way to their first NBA title, nobody outdid the Nuggets. Nobody. Well, in game 1, it was tied with 6 minutes to play. Tied. And Minnesota made the bigger plays. They made the bigger buckets. They made more stops. And it was jolting as a Nuggets fan to see that, because you're not used to seeing that. You're used to seeing the Nuggets out executing and surgically carving up the opposition. Did not happen this time around. So credit to the Wolves for winning the crunch time minutes.
Vic, are you nervous about the Nuggets bench as it relates to the Timberwolves bench?
Michael, you're damn right. I mean, the Timberwolves have a deep bench. I mean, take a look at the guy that won the game for the Timberwolves. I get it. Anthony Edwards was unstoppable, 43 points. But they don't win that game if not for Naz Reid. And Naz Reid is what, a 6'11 guy coming off the bench who hit, I think he scored 9 straight points in the fourth quarter. One of those buckets was a bank three, for crying out loud. But he's the sixth man of the year. That's a big, big deal. Their bench is better than the Nuggets bench. So if the Nuggets starting five doesn't get a big lead, doesn't build off what they have, bench play, it's given. It's a given that the Minnesota Timberwolves are better. They're the deeper team. I think they're one of the deepest teams in the league.
Yeah, Minnesota Timberwolves have been awesome all throughout the season. They looked really good. They have yet to lose so far in this postseason. We're hanging out with Vic Lombardi here on the Progressive Guest Line. Vic, of course, reporter and host at Altitude Sports, covering the Nuggets and the Broncos. We'll get into the Broncos in a little bit later, but I do want to ask you about Jamal Murray and this calf injury. Are we not making enough about this? Because like right now, it's obviously something that he has accepted is going to be a thing throughout this postseason, dealing with that calf injury that we saw kind of hamper him a little bit in the Lakers series. Are we not making enough about this, and that Murray's maybe a little bit more compromised than we all believe?
Well, it's pretty obvious to those of us who have followed the Nuggets for a long time, he is compromised because he just doesn't have a burst. He doesn't have the ability to jump off that leg. And when you're dealing with injuries in the postseason, I am confident that if this were a regular season game, all right, Jamal Murray and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope probably wouldn't be playing tonight because they're dealing with knick-knack injuries that would limit them. It's a playoff game. So excuses go out the window. They're not going to make excuses about being banged up. But when you're dealing with these calves, and we saw it in Milwaukee, a calf injury, a calf strain can lead to a bigger deal. So I think he's just being very tentative at this point. It's tight. It's probably sore. It's not at that point where it's restricting him from playing, but it's right at the line, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how far he wants to take it. And that's what I see when I see Jamal Murray. He's not explosive as we're used to seeing. His point production is down. His shooting efficiency is down. Three-point efficiency is down. Every number, every numerical set you have is down this season. And I think it has a lot to do with his injury.
Yeah, and the volume of games, too. I don't think we talk enough about that. I mean, when you go to the finals or you go to the NFC, the Super Bowl, the games, the volume of practices wears and tear on your body, and it's harder to recover. Yeah. And as we're seeing in these playoffs, Vic, I think the age of some of these guys, they can't do it on one day rest anymore. You know, it's hard. And, the Clippers have an older team. The Bucks, they lost two guys in the playoffs, right? And so the Suns are an older team. It's just hard. I won't even go to the 76ers. That's a horse of a whole other color. We don't want to go there, Vic. But, all right, let's talk about the Broncos. So everybody kind of knew that Sean was in love with Bo Nix. What's been the reaction and talking to people within the building there at Denver? And, they've made no changes in their personnel department really since Sean's gotten there. George, they've taken all the authority away from George, but are they going to make some changes this year?
I don't foresee any changes, Michael, to be honest with you. I think the initial reaction in Denver when they drafted Bo Nix was, what the hell is this? The sixth quarterback taken in the first 12 picks. But when you take a step back and you assess what Sean Payton does, what he can do, if there's a coach out there who can game plan a quarterback into being successful, it is Sean Payton. So if I had to pick somebody to, all right, you mentor this quarterback, you make sure he's set to go, you make sure he's he's among the contemporaries, I would give my resources to Sean Payton. I get that. I think a lot of Broncos fans just wonder if Bo Nix is a long-term answer. We're not sure about that. I can tell you this, Sean Payton basically invested his future on this pick. We all know this, right? If it doesn't work out for whatever reason, if he fails, then so does Sean Payton. So give the guy credit for at least going in that direction. Bo Nix The numbers don't lie. His efficiency in college, amazing stuff. This ain't college, but he's seen a lot of college quarterbacks. You know, this is the first time that Sean Payton has ever drafted a quarterback in the first two rounds. He just doesn't do that. It goes against the grain. So I'm interested to see how this works.
Yeah, I mean, they mentioned how he tried to do it with Patrick Mahomes back in 2017, was unable to do that. The Chiefs took him right before he could pick him with the New Orleans Saints. But now he has that same kind of conviction, at least reportedly, with Bo Nix here. I guess, so what do you think should be realistic expectations for Bo Nix? I think on the outside, we probably all expect that he'll be the week one starter, but so does the betting market, and it's a little skeptical of this. The win total is at 5.5. What should we expect to see later on this fall? I know there's a lot of time between now and then, but I guess what should be the expectations?
Well, I would give the edge to the Nix. If I were a betting man, I'd tell you Nix is the starter unless Zach Wilson can steal the starting spot for him. So Zach has to do something in camp. Zach Wilson has to prove to Sean Payton that he is not the quarterback that he was with the Jets, that he's something better. And if he does that, perhaps he can wrest away the starting spot. But if all things remain equal and you see that same version of Zach Wilson, then you got to go with Bo Nix. I mean, what do they have to lose at this point? You're in the division with Patrick frickin' Mahomes. I mean, where are you going? Right? What are you going to do exactly? What is your future here in the next 3 years? You're just trying to build, sustain, and hopefully when Mahomes is done with this whole business, then you make your run at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think they beat him last year. I thought the team after the 70-point debacle down in Miami rallied, and obviously they ran out. But, I mean, you know, I think they're in a division that's hard. You got Harbaugh went to a Super Bowl. Sean's won a Super Bowl. Andy's got three of them and been to four. It's going to be a challenge. I mean, they're going to have to find their niche. But the only way you're going to do it is with the quarterback, which is what I think they tried to do. And their offensive line, it should be improved this year. Don't you feel that way? With the second year with McGlinchey, they got the really good guard at right guard. I think that their ability to run the football, and if Nix can do what Sean wants him to do, which he couldn't get Russell to do, I think can have a longer stay. Plus, look, at some point they're going to get some of the, you know, they're going to have some picks where they can get back into the draft again.
Yeah, I think, Mike, the Broncos offense will be 100% improved if the quarterback doesn't turn his back on the play in front of him, which is what Russell Wilson was apt to do many times. He would just turn and run, and that's not a Sean Payton offense. He wants you looking downfield and making decisions and processing and not abandoning the play. And, you know, say what you want about Russell Wilson. I hope he does well in Pittsburgh, but it just didn't work with Sean Payton's system. There are too many moments where he said, I'm going to screw this play. I'm going to figure something out. You can't figure something out in the Sean Payton offense. You got to go where the ball is designed to go. So, yeah, the offensive line I thought was capable last year, and they return a lot of those starters, a lot of those players. They still don't have a bona fide tight end. That's one thing that this team is lacking. They did improve the running game. I thought a sleeper pick was Audric Estime out of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I think he'll bring a little bulk in the red zone. So they're a better team in some of those skill positions, but it remains to be seen. Can Bo Nix do what Sean Payton envisioned? Can he do what Russell Wilson could not? Can't wait to find out.
Yeah, that's going to be a fascinating storyline throughout this NFL offseason heading into the regular season this fall. He is Vic Lombardi. Check out all his work over at Altitude. Covers the Nuggets, covers the Broncos,
great
and does
work,
it really,
Vic.
Really well. Vic, we appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, Vic.
Thank you, boys.
Awesome stuff there from Vic Lombardi. There's joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, we got one more segment to wrap this thing on up. Vic, he said it, Jamal Murray's injury, it's a little bit shaky. Well, I bet on them anyways to go ahead and win that series. So hopefully that calf can hold up.
Well, Gobert might not play. So there you go. That's one for one. Yeah, there you go.
Let's hope it holds up. We'll wrap things up on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament to the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code VSiN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSiN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Vic Lombardi, who joined us in the last segment. Covers the Denver Nuggets and Broncos for Altitude. He's a host and reporter out there, so had good insight on the Denver area sports as Nuggets fans. Maybe a little bit nervous here with the Jamal Murray thing, but I think they'll come through later on tonight. They are currently 6.5-point
favorites.
Keep
talking yourself into it, Femi. That's what good bettors do. You talk yourself into it. There you go, Femi.
Hey, well, it's positive or negative.
You put the money down. You might as well just talk yourself into it. Yes.
Whatever I say has no outcome on what happens on the court tonight, so might as well be positive about it until you have to be negative.
There you go. That's a good strategy.
It's a good outlook
to
have on life.
I agree with that.
Speaking of being positive, we're trying to be positive about my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, who the offseason has been, I guess, uneventful so far. We'll see what happens with maybe some extensions looming for Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and perhaps maybe Micah Parsons. But their win total still sits at 10.5 over at DraftKings as we continue our deep dive on the division draft recaps. And for the Dallas Cowboys, they addressed offensive line with their first pick, taking Tyler Guyton, 29th overall. And then they addressed some defense. They got an edge guy out of Western Michigan in Marshawn Nealon. Then they went ahead and went back to the O-line with Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State in the third round, but it wasn't a big fanfare type of draft, and it hasn't been a fanfare type of offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. Michael, should we be skeptical of America's team heading to this fall?
Well, yeah, but look, one of the deficiencies in their team last year was their offensive line, whether it was Tyron Smith not being able to hold up. There were times where Terrence Steele couldn't hold up at right tackle. Zach Martin was injured. You know, they had a lot of things going on within their line, but I think adding Guyton gives them, whether they play him at left guard, left tackle, and they move Tyler Smith outside to left tackle, help. I think Beebe's got to be a guy who starts for him at center. Can he beat out Brock Hoffman? That would be good. If you could play a rookie at center and a rookie at left guard or a rookie at left tackle, you can get away with it. And I think off defensively, knowing that you have Mike Zimmer, you're going to be physical. You know, he's going to move Micah Parsons around a lot. He's going to make it difficult for a team on third down. So that's an advantage. You know, they just got to get some of their younger players. Mazi Smith's got to take a step up, right? They're going to need to get some of these guys to play. And can they play man-to-man? I mean, that's going to be the key. Can they play man-to-man? Will Jordan Lewis hold up? Can Bland hold up? You know, Diggs is a guesser. Well, he's going to turn the ball over. But, look, it's going to be come down to can they win these close games. And I think it's going to be Zeke gives them the short yardage and the power back they didn't have last year. Somehow they've got to find that loose play player who can make somebody miss and make it into a 20-yard gain. And they missed the Pollard area in receptions. 2 years ago, he averaged over 10 yards a catch. They missed that. They're going to need to get that back.
It's interesting because, like, the noise around the Dallas Cowboys is that they have taken a big, big step back this offseason. But when you look at the betting market to win the NFC, they're still the fourth choice. I mean, they're kind of co-third with the Philadelphia Eagles. Niners are the favorites. The Lions are the second choice. The Eagles and Cowboys both at 7-1. The Packers at 8-1. But I think if you polled most NFL fans and you asked them who's the better team, the Cowboys or the Packers, they'd say the Green Bay Packers, not just because of what we saw in the playoffs, but just because, I guess, the ascending quarterback in Jordan Love and having that youthful, skilled guys around him could maybe take another step forward in 2024. Why do you think the betting market is still, I guess, this high on the Dallas Cowboys, despite what a lot of the outside noise seems to think of them?
Well, it's America's team. They still have Dak, right? They still have a really good receiver in CeeDee Lamb. Brandon Cooks can still be a good guy if he can stay healthy, right? So Jake Ferguson, the tight end, they won a lot of games last year. They have Parsons on defense. So they have skill guys. I mean, they have really good players, right? They have a kicker who didn't miss very many kicks last year. That's always a great recipe to win in close games. Yeah. And I think America saw them win a lot of games last year, not as much on the road as they could have. The loss in Miami, Green Bay, those places. But I think there's a belief because of Dak, because of the skill, you know, with Parsons and Lamb, that they're going to come back. I think the depth of the team will be challenged, and they've got to be really good up front. They need the inside defensive tackles to come through for them, you know. And so, you know, and both of them were drafted, one in 21 and one in 23. Macy was a first-round pick last year, and I can't pronounce Osa's name in the last year. But years from them.
Yeah.
Digazua, and they need Lawrence to play at a higher level. Nealon, a kid they drafted in the second, they could kind of rotate him in with Sam Williams. But I think a lot of it is because of Dak. Because when you look at the quarterbacks in the just in the NFC, Dak's in the top five quarterbacks there, no matter what you think of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, the NFC much weaker than the AFC. When you start talking about, like, just looking at the quarterbacks, the AFC's a gauntlet compared to what the NFC is producing out there. All right, well, speaking of quarterbacks, let's get into some of the QB1 matchup props at DraftKings as we got about 5 minutes left here in the show. And the first one is kind of applies what we were discussing with our buddy Vic Lombardi in the last segment. The Denver Broncos, who will be the week one starter to take that first snap for them? Bo Nix right now is the big favorite, minus 300. Jared Stidham at plus 330. Zach Wilson at 9-1. I feel like smart money here would be putting it on Bo Nix, right?
It would be. You know, the only thing is, the only way Nix doesn't start is if he gets hurt, which he's not going to have any contact until the first game of the year. You know, he's going to play in the preseason with very little contact. So, yeah, I think that's the smart play here. It's interesting, though, as we go to the next team, the Raiders, Minshew's minus 400. Nix is only minus 300. I mean, that's a strong signal that Minshew's starting, which I think is the right number there. I think there's no question that's the right number.
Yeah, Aiden O'Connell plus 270 to be the Raiders starting quarterback. But yeah, Minshew, I mean, there's a reason why they gave him the money that they gave him in free agency. And that was an early move in free agency as well. So I think the Raiders, I mean, I might be a little skeptical of this Minshew thing at quarterback. But I mean, apparently they seem comfortable with it, at least comfortable enough for him to be the week one starter. Minnesota is interesting.
I don't know how you could be comfortable, though, Femi. I don't know how
I don't,
you could. I mean,
because
if you study Minshew's career, I've always said this about Minshew, and I'm a Minshew fan. I said he's a poor man's Baker Mayfield. And I don't mean that as a negative. But the more you watch him, his arm strength and his inability to play 17 games and the wear and tear on his lower body. See, this is something I don't think we're talking enough about, is the lower body is where quarterbacks throw the football from. And when you have an Achilles injury or you have that, you got to get your lower body in shape. And Minshew's just not a naturally big man. And he loses arm strength because he doesn't have a core lower body that's powerful. He's a middle reliever. And when you're asking a middle reliever to be a starter for 17 games, you're in trouble.
What about the Vikings situation where Sam Darnold minus 160, J.J. McCarthy plus 120 to be the week one starter? But it feels like a lot of the reports all suggest that it's likely going to be Darnold, barring some McCarthy just amazing performance in training camp and preseason.
Yeah, and how can he have that amazing performance? So one thing I would do before I made this bet, I would see if Minnesota's practicing against another team, because that's where Mac Jones was able to beat out
Cam Newton.
He went, they practiced against the Giants, and they practiced against a couple teams, and he looked good. The Eagles and then the Giants, and he looked really good against Philly, looked really good. So, and they played him quite a bit. So I would wait until see that. I think it's going to be Darnold, because I don't think you can give McCarthy the whole playbook. And I think if you try to scale back, all it does is hinder Hockenson, it hinders Jefferson, it hinders, you know, all the other players within the team, within the framework of the team, and I don't think you can do that. So I think Darnold initially gives them the best chance.
Our producer Elliot is telling me that they'll be practicing with the Browns at training camp. The Minnesota Vikings will be. So that'll be maybe interesting situation there for J.J. McCarthy.
It's a good one to see.
New England Patriots. It's Jacoby Brissett minus 550, Drake May plus 350. This one, another one, feels like the veteran is going to be the guy to take the first snaps.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, I mean, unless Brissett gets hurt. Yeah. And if he gets hurt, I'm not sure what they would do, right? And so I think there's no question that it's going to be – they signed Brissett as a – they knew, unlike Super Bowl-winning GM Terry Fontenot, they knew they were going to draft a quarterback at three. They knew who it was probably going to be. They signed Brissett with that in mind.
Yeah, they didn't have to wait for the college workout to go ahead and be wowed by him. Pittsburgh Steelers, yeah. Russell Wilson minus 700, Justin Fields plus 450 here for Pittsburgh. I mean, that should probably be off the board, if we're being honest. Like, it's Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, unless Wilson gets hurt, he's not going to get hurt in the preseason, let's be clear. He knows how to play in the preseason, so he's not going to get hurt.
What about Seattle? Geno Smith minus 330, Sam Howell plus 225, a little bit of an eyebrow raiser.
I think, to me, this one's worth noting and keeping an eye on. Geno's, you know, played well for 2 years for them, but I think with the new staff, I think everything's up for grabs, and we'll see how Hal handles it. You know, Hal's coming into a new system, but also remember now, Hal got the crap beat out of him. It may take him at least 4 months to not keep flinching, because he got really beat up. So I would just kind of wait on this. But this one's interesting. I think a lot of this is we'll be able to judge this through the month of May, through June, through the mini camps.
Yeah, maybe if you start hearing about Sam Howell taking those first team reps, pay attention to that later on this offseason. That does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Michael, I will see you on Thursday. Thank you to our producer, Elliot. As always, the whole crew behind the glass. We'll see you guys later. Sharp Money's coming up next at the top of the hour here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.